You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, New England Center for Investigative Journalism at BU and New York Times contributor Brooke Williams on Think Tanks for Sale. Also on the program today, it's August 9th, 2016. That means happy birthday to my daughter, Mila, who is 11 years old today. Also, to celebrate, Jeb Bush's son stabs his dad in the back.
Okay.
That's what George P. Did to his daddy. Meanwhile, Obamacare appears to be making people healthier. Government employment at its lowest percentage since 1959. U.S. releases dirty war documents. And the Department of Justice is to require police departments around the country to report all arrested-related deaths. That's right. That hasn't been going on as ridiculous as one would think. It has not been happening. Paul Ryan facing a Trump-loving primary challenge today probably will win. But Never Trump has a candidate who may just very well be on the ballot in two states. And Curt Schilling is already setting his eyes on 2024. That mortality rate, I should say, increase that we saw last year for white males seems to have dropped and returned to the mean. And more accusations about Roger Ailes. You know, at one point, one has to wonder, is this guy going to end up in prison? Is there going to be criminal charges against this guy? And what about it seems to me you may have some securities violations by some of the financial people at Fox News, or Fox News Corp, I should say. Because if I was a shareholder, I certainly wasn't made aware of all the stuff that Roger Ailes was spending his money on. His private security forces, apparently. I mean, this guy, what a horrible human being. And I guess he got $40 or $60 million to go walk away.
And Trump will hire him to run the media launch if he's not in jail.
I hope this guy, at the very least, I don't know. You know, it just, you hate to see something work out for a guy like that. You really, if there's anybody who should be hit by a bus, with all due respect, and I mean that, I don't wish ill upon anybody. I'm just trying to wish good luck upon a bus.
Like Hotline Bling remix for Sam with this.
Folks, as you can see, I haven't shaved. It's over the weekend. Now, I work at a co-op at once a month. And I actually got stopped by one of the customers. He was like, you're Sam Cedar, which also shocked me because usually they say Sam Stein. And they said, well, what's with the beard? It's not really a beard. It's just a couple of days of growth. It's over the weekend. And I explained to her, I don't shave until I have to go do television or things get just really just too itchy. And what I did not tell her is something that you already probably know. When I shave with Harry's. Why do I shave with my razor from harrys.com? They actually ask you to tell on the copy, like, say the things that you like about it. And I've never been a shaving connoisseur, right? I don't feel too specific about the shave. But the things I came up with, I like the closeness of the shave. I don't get as many ingrown hairs. I don't know if that's a function of the blades or what. I don't know why. I like the weight of the handle. But really, at the end of the day, I like it because of the price. I'm sorry. That's me. I want a quality product. I don't want to pay that much for it at all. Quality is always 100% guaranteed with Harry's. If you don't love your shave, Harry's will completely refund you. But here's the part that I like. The starter set, an amazing deal. You get a weighted razor handle of your choice, moisturizing shave cream, 3 precision-engineered 5-blade cartridges, a travel cover, because there's nothing like putting your hand in your Dob kit and pulling out like a bloody finger because you're trying to get your razor. You get all that for $15. $15. What convinced me to get Harry's for the first time? Well, because for a limited time only, we have a special deal for fans of this show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code MAJORITYREPORT. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you don't need to be a math PhD to understand. $5 off of 15 is $10. For a razor, 3 cartridges, shaving cream, and a cover. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter the code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout to claim your offer. That's harrys.com, code MAJORITYREPORT. Don't be silly, folks. Well, you can be silly, but not with a razor in your hand. You should be careful. You don't want to be too silly. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Brooke Williams, senior investigative reporter, senior trainer at the New England Center for Investigative Journalism at BU, and a contributor to the New York Times, on her piece written with Eric Lipton on the corruption of think tanks. I don't know how else to put it. Maybe she'll put it a different way. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Brooke Williams, senior investigative reporter and senior trainer at the New England Center for Investigative Journalism at BU, contributor to the New York Times, She has written, along with Eric Lipton, and for the third piece, Nicholas Confessori, two separate pieces on the blurry line, I guess you could call it, of think tanks and think tank scholars between lobbying and corporate consultant. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's start with part one, which was released, I guess, end of last week in the New York Times. And I want to start with a clip of Elizabeth Warren, which is part of that piece. It's a 90-second clip, but it outlines, at least broadly speaking, a problem with think tanks. Here's Elizabeth Warren from that New York Times piece.
If a corporation wants to influence what we're doing here in the United States Senate, and they want to do it through lobbying, they have to register. And all of that has to be disclosed, and who their lobbyists are have to be disclosed. So when they come in here, you know this is a corporation that's advancing its own economic interests. Buyer beware. But what the corporations, some of them are doing, is they're taking a bank shot at that. So they take a lot of money, because they got plenty of money to spend. They put it into a think tank with a few strings attached. And the think tank comes up with the research that just so happens to advance the interests of the corporation. And then someone from the think tank takes it to the United States Senate and hands it around. What's really happened is the corporation has both hidden what it is doing and it has bought the glossy name of independence of that think tank. My view is that this is thinly disguised lobbying, but lobbying nonetheless. Doing it under the other umbrella, under the pretense that this is independent research, that's what makes it so dangerous. That then means, right here in the Senate, we can make bad decisions. Decisions that may favor a corporation, a particular one that paid for it, but not decisions that favor the American people.
And I would say that's not just a problem in the context of the U.S. Senate. And so, Brooke, there are think tanks, right? And there are think tanks. And Brookings,
right.
Tell people what you think I mean by that, because my sense is, you know, there's Brookings and then there's, you know, the Heritage Foundation, let's say. Tell us what the distinction is, and particularly in the context of, and not just in the Senate, but also it strikes me as just like in the NPR world, if there is such a thing.
So, I mean, in the big picture, I mean, what we're talking about here are papers that have the patina of independence, perhaps even academic independence, that are financed and shaped, even in some cases, by corporations. And when they're provided to, you know, lawmakers, whether it's Congress or federal agencies, they are then used to shape policies that affect our lives. Now, when it comes to different types of think tanks, yes, some think tanks are ideologically, you know, to the right, to the left, conservative, progressive, and then there are some that are in the middle. You know, we examined 75 think tanks. There are many, many think tanks in Washington, D.C., of all sorts of stripes.
And so, I mean, when they're in the middle, I mean, and this is the story, one of the big stories was, I mean, it seems to me that when they're in the middle, they're the most ripe, I guess, for corporate sponsorship. I mean, is that...
Yeah. Brookings' work and the Center for Strategic and International Studies, you know, there are think tanks in Washington, D.C. that some view the work that comes out, and much of it is, some view the work that comes out as independent of corporate interests or foreign government interests, as scholarship that was not influenced that was not part of a broader lobbying and influence campaign by a corporation, right? And what we discovered is that in many cases it is part of a lobbying campaign, and in many cases that's not disclosed.
All right, let's talk about that instance in terms of the Lennar Corporation, if I'm pronouncing that right, and Brookings. So, and again, for people, you know, how would you characterize, I mean, I guess we've characterized Brookings, but it's just, I feel like everybody listening to this has heard from a Brookings Institute expert, and it's usually, it seems to me, like they're the people who go on PBS. They're the people who go on NPR because, like you say, they have this patina, maybe deserved, but maybe in some instances not, of being completely independent without an agenda, but for where the facts have taken them. You know, sort of a more financed, more research oriented sort of classic objective journalist in some way.
Yes, and I think, you know, this is something that's changed over time. You know, think tanks, in particular Brookings, have been called, you know, quote, universities without students. And so there is this sense that there's independent scholarship happening, and there certainly is. But internal documents, Brookings internal documents, an examination of thousands of pages of documents showing how Brookings interacts with these corporate donors showed us that they are offering to help with marketing, you know, like with JP Morgan Chase, which, by the way, gave $15.5 million to Brookings. That's the largest private corporation donation in Brookings history.
All right, so let's talk about this with Brookings. Let's start with this then. The Global Cities Initiative, what is that?
So it's an initiative aimed to increase investment and export investment in cities.
Around the world or just in this country?
Yes, so in the U.S., it's an effort to help cities figure out how to increase their exports, so how to help businesses export more goods outside of this country.
And from J.P. Morgan's, this is a J.P. Morgan Chase program, is that right?
It's a combined program, Brookings and J.P. Morgan Chase, a co-branded program.
And my understanding is that J.P. Morgan Chase has a pretty big vested financial interest in this program insofar as they would be doing a lot of financing for all of these programs that would be carried out under the Global Cities Initiative.
Yes, they have a financial stake in cities and creating more exports and in the partnerships that are created with the economic development corporations and city officials. You know, at all of the events that that Brookings and J.P. Morgan threw at these different cities, you know, you had someone from Brookings, you had the J.P. Morgan Chase big executive who's in charge of that region there speaking, and you know, there's discussion in these documents about, you know, how can we, you know, bring J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, we don't want to create overt marketing opportunities, but how can we essentially, Brookings, in these internal documents, we can see that there's a discussion about, you know, which cities to go to and focusing on cities that matter to J.P. Morgan Chase. And why they matter is that that's where they're able to make more money.
Because they have probably pre-existing relationships, they have more lobbying in those specific cities. They're going to be first in line to provide this financing, and
or they're looking to expand, right? Expand into a certain city.
And so, it was fairly explicit though that this was a Brookings J.P. Morgan Chase program, was it or no?
Yes, it's co-branded. on all of the events and the website, and it discloses that it's a Brookings JP Morgan Chase initiative.
But if you were to ask Brookings at the time and say, hey, isn't this problematic? They would say, well, no. I mean, we subscribe to this idea. JP Morgan Chase subscribes to this idea. We're not doing anything special for them. We're just developing research. But when you start to see this coordination of how to market and expand these things, that's where it becomes problematic.
Correct. Yes. When you see inside the communication between JP Morgan Chase and Brookings, and how they're working together and why, that's where it becomes problematic.
All right. So tell us about this relationship between Lennar Corporation. Is that it? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. Lennar. Okay. Lennar. So Lennar was hoping to develop a swath of land in San Francisco. And it used to be a former naval base. And there was toxic waste on the site, and there was strong community opposition. So at the same time that it was getting approval of its environmental report in San Francisco, it started donating money to Brookings. Now, Brookings, in its communication about this money, offered to, quote, engage with the national media to develop stories that highlight Lennar's innovative approach, end quote.
That to me sounds like the pitch of a PR PR company.
Yeah, I'm unclear on the difference.
Okay, I am too. All right, so continue.
And so then it went on, and also this is in the context of seeking another donation to name Mr. Bonner, Kofi Bonner, the Lennar executive, the same executive in charge of this particular project in San Francisco, as a senior fellow. And in that position, Mr. Bonner went on to use it to advance the company's efforts. They called him a trusted advisor.
I bet.
And you have Brookings, Mr. Katz, who was in charge of this program, going out and talking to reporters about how great it is, with Mr. Bonner standing next to him. And, you know, who knows? I don't know that anyone knows the relationship between the two at this point, right?
Wow. And so, let me ask you this. What is Brookings' response to something like this? In your experience, how widespread is something like this?
This stemmed from an effort to look at how widespread it is. I had heard for years anecdotally, we've heard that this is happening. And after examining more than 5 years worth of contributions from corporations and foreign governments to think tanks, and then examining also the ties that think tank scholars have with industry, for instance, as registered lobbyists in relatively few cases, and in many other cases as consultants for industry, examining those relationships in 75 think tanks, and knowing that there are new think tanks, popping up frequently in Washington, D.C., I say this is widespread. Now, it's not happening all over all of the think tanks. There are good people trying to do good scholarship, good independent scholarship at these think tanks. And they are. The problem lies when corporations seek to fund specific reports, right? So there used to be funding for the general fund. That has changed as funding has become more scarce, and corporations want to fund specific reports, and they want to see how the work is being done and what will come of it.
So, in other words, okay, so just to be clear, so there used to be a corporation would donate to the operational fund, largely mm-hmm. speaking, and there would be more autonomy from the think tank to do whatever it wanted with that money. But now think tanks are coming in. And, I mean, I should say corporations are coming in saying like, oh, we're going to give you money. It's just that we want to give you money to generate X, Y, or Z. And we would like, obviously, we would like X, Y, or Z to say A, B, and C. And if you can't do that, then you can't do that. And that's where, I mean, because it seems to me that even if you're getting it operationally, right, that there's going to be some measure of pressure insofar as, like, I can't set up a think tank that focuses on, let's say, environmental issues and anticipate that, well, I suppose we do see that, but I can't anticipate that I'm going to get money from Exxon unless my product, my output is a certain thing. Like, for instance, the Heartland Institute, right? I mean, so we know there are think tanks that are like that, that are set up as sort of with a veneer. Isn't the problem is that there are think tanks that we have all assumed are not that way? Is that the dilemma?
That's the problem. And these experts and scholars and people at the think tanks are testifying before Congress. They're going on CNN. They're reaching the public in the debate about public policy, in the public discourse. And they're reaching the lawmakers that are making these decisions, important decisions, about, you know, whether we should be selling drones to some foreign countries, about healthcare, about, you know, net neutrality.
About things like building nuclear aircrafts to deal with China for $11 billion. So isn't there also a massive failure here by the media? I mean, you know, in part two, you talk about a guy, you mentioned this in net neutrality, Eisenach, I guess his name is.
Eisenach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jeffrey Eisenach. And he is a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Now, me, because I've been doing this for a dozen years, I know when I hear the American Enterprise Institute, I understand that they have a lot of corporate backing. But here's a guy who writes, who's met with the FCC. He's appeared in front of Congress. He's testified that net neutrality is bad for won't improve consumer welfare or protect the public interest. This is before the Senate. And he not only is a former aide at the FTC, but he's also a paid consultant for Verizon.
Right.
And that, I mean, isn't there a failure of all the institutions, the media, I guess these committees, I mean, that's to be expected on some level, right? I mean, that's what politics are about. But there's a failure of all these other institutions to not get this type of disclosure and make sure that they're giving the disclosure and that they're getting it from the specific person.
That's right. I mean, as a reporter, you know, we often have to call experts. We need to talk to somebody about a particular issue who has an independent, you know, is able to explain it to us based on their own research that isn't financially connected to a company that might benefit from it, right? And so the need for experts exists. And yes, the media has failed in this case by often, you know, quoting people without looking into their background. Or interviewing them, in essence, helping this lobbying campaign that think tanks have become part of. And so I hope that that reporters, columnists, talk show hosts, everybody will start to think, you know, let me check the background of this person. Let me ask.
Well,
you know, have you received money from, you know, any company that is involved in what we're talking about here?
Is there anything, I mean, beyond that? Like, I mean, for instance, I have you on the show today. I didn't do extensive research about your background. I mean, for all
right.
I know, you're being paid by, you're being paid by, you know, the Hoover Institute to knock Brookings out of the box, as it were.
Right.
But these are also are these institutes? I imagine they're tax. They're not for profit organizations that don't pay taxes. The donations to these institutes, as far as I know, are tax deductible. Isn't there an opportunity for some measure of, if there is the political will, to say, okay, look, your nonprofit status, you must attain a certain level of, I don't know, I mean, disclosure or transparency, or the funding must not come from an area where you have potential conflict of interest. I mean, is there any opportunity from a policy level to make those type of changes? Because I don't have a lot of faith that we're going to see renewed diligence, or maybe we ever had diligence from our media, frankly, in this instance.
Right. So in this case, it comes down to goods and services. So what we're talking about here are subsidies by taxpayers, right? So these are deductible donations. And under the law, they're deductible only if they're not provided, given in exchange for goods and services. Now, we talked to some tax experts who say that the arrangements may be improper because they appear to be goods and services. One internal document showed assurances from Brookings that it would provide donation benefits, that's in quotes, like getting corporate executives in the same room with key government officials.
Mm. Well, with our show, we just give stickers and occasionally shopping bags.
So, it's an IRS regulation. And there are questions about, whether the nonprofit, these specific donations should have been tax deductible and maybe improper.
To your knowledge, are there any ethics organizations? Are there any groups that are filing complaints with, I guess it would be with the IRS, or maybe, I mean, is that essentially who has jurisdiction over something like this? I don't know. Would it be the FTC?
Yeah.
I mean, who would one file a complaint with in this instance?
Well, I would say, certainly they're a member of Congress. Certainly the IRS is in charge of monitoring and regulating tax-exempt organizations.
All right. Well, it's an amazing two-part series that I encourage everyone to check out. Brooke Williams, Senior Investigative Reporter at the New England Center for Investigative Journalism at BU. Contributor, New York Times. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. We will head into the fun half in a moment. But I just want to say one other thing about the Brookings Institute. There has been sort of stories around. Nothing as comprehensive as we've seen in the New York Times the past week, these two-part stories. But a couple of years ago, I know David Sirota, was digging into, when he was doing all this stuff, and I think he was doing some of this with Taibbi as well, stories on how there was this billionaire, John Arnold, and I think he was an Enron guy, if I remember correctly, who was basically launching an all-out assault on public worker pensions across the country. And it culminated in Rhode Island, where the public pensions were cut, if I remember correctly. And there was a supposed public pension reform movement out there, which was really geared towards making sure that financial services people got more fees at the end of the day, and that public sector unions were hurt. And the Brookings Institution put out, and I think PBS, in fact, too, the Brookings Institution and PBS both got grants, if I remember correctly. Brookings Institution, I can't remember how much it was. Maybe it was $500,000 by this guy, John Arnold, and was, of course, putting out reports. Pension, public pensions in crisis. So this has been an ongoing problem. And I don't, frankly, know how you resolve something like this. You know, the Brookings Institute also was, you know, it's funded by individuals who may also have perspectives. And, you know, supposedly one of Hillary Clinton's biggest donors donates to the Brookings Institute. And the Brookings Institute was one of the, I don't know if they were the main, but they were a very loud voice in arguing that a lot of Bernie Sanders' proposals were not legit, were pie in the sky, the numbers didn't add up, whatever it was. And so it's very difficult to separate this stuff out. And it's problematic, you know, because there's a big, there's a sort of an invirtuous, disvirtuous cycle here. I mean, the best example of this is like when Dick Cheney leaks to Judith Miller, there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and then goes on Meet the Press and says, it's not me saying this, it's Judith Miller saying this. I mean, on some level, what these think tanks and these experts end up becoming are just whitewashers. They're just carrying an opinion from corporations and individuals who have an agenda, and they give it this sheen and this patina, as Brooke called it, of impartiality, of rigor, of expertise, of academia, and then sell it right back to the public. I feel like NPR is the worst at this. They deliver this stuff, it seems to me, just sort of, they will box up the most sort of corporate-friendly funded ideas and ideology, and they will just wrap it up in, you know, this, like, it's almost like academic newspapers.
Interviews with a lot of ambient sound.
Yeah, exactly. There's, and, you know, it's these, you know, at the very least, when it's the Heritage Foundation, at least it comes with a disclaimer. The Conservative Heritage Foundation. Brookings never comes with a disclaimer. And to the extent that it did, you would never hear the disclaimer be the corporate funded as the disclaimer, right? It's only maybe center left you would hear, but that's not the point here, is it? That doesn't tell you really anything about the agenda, just that in maybe everything else that they're talking about, they're normal people. Just so happens that they're getting funded by corporations. Now, I actually think that the only way to deal with this would be if you did have, I mean, you can't get rid of these things. You can't make it illegal. But you should have, like, you know, here's the Brookings Institute, funded by J.P. Morgan Chase, which stands to make a lot of money. Now come tell us why this is a good idea.
We just really need to figure out what the hell's going on.
We just need to know what the hell is going on.
So true for so many things.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Are we going to talk about Donald Trump's economic speech that he gave yesterday? Oh, yeah, we've got one clip from it. I can't believe he said this. He was on the teleprompters yesterday, and it was he had bold new changes to his tax plan. He's lowering or no, raising the top tax bracket and getting rid of the inheritance tax.
Surprise, surprise.
I wonder if that's how he got Ivanka's support.
Becca, what can I do for you? I want to help the...
I don't think I'm going to help your book sales. However, how about I save you 55% on everything over $3 million that I give to you?
But I want to help the forgotten middle class. No more date night? Okay. No problem, Ivanka.
We're going to take a quick break. We got all sorts of sound. We'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920. Is this the one from David Bowie's?
This is Johnny Holiday.
Oh, the Johnny Holiday. You got to do the... I had a late night session where I was just like, oh, my God, look at this one. I'm going to send this to Matt. Then that one, then this one, then that one. So it's going to get a little weird around here for a couple of days. All right, I'll be right back.